the American artist, is a composer, musician, with a very, very long, one-page, long list of composition achievements. He's chairman of the San Diego State University Department of Music. And Greg Steinke will tell us about how he uses the poetic images of North American native music in the compositional process, especially the imagery, the poetic imagery of this music.
Thanks very much, Carlos. Can you all hear me there? Okay, okay. I want to thank you very much for this opportunity to appear in this forum. This has been a new experience for me. I tend to be one that, I don't know, can you see this all right? If you can. Normally I end up being part of composers' groups and college music societies, so this has really been a nice experience to come here and to be in a new forum, as it were. And I think really some of the work I'm presenting here today really is made possible by the fact that many of you, through your work, archival work, preserve these collections so that when I, as a composer and others like me, need to use it, it's there and it's accessible to be used. So I really want to thank you for that. And I might remark on some things that were said this morning as an administrator that I am one of those administrators that does try very much to support archival work. I hope you'll be interested to hear that. Not all administrators are necessarily hard-nosed about that, but I saw early on in my work as an administrator that it's very important to support library resources and to help you folks in any way we can. Let me go right ahead. I'll try not to talk too much because I have some music examples that I primarily want to share with you today. There's been a long tradition that goes back to around the late 19th century and around the turn of the century of using Native American materials in music, and it's primarily peculiar to composers of North America, although there were certainly Europeans that also did that too. But people like Edward McDowell, Charles Wakefield Cadman, Victor Herbert, Arthur Farwell, Griffiths, and then more recently people like Mario Castelnuovo Tedesco, Elliot Carter, and many others, plus other contemporary composers with myself today that are using Native American materials in their compositions. And there seems in recent years to be a real upsurge in the use of this material. I was first attracted to it really some years ago when I taught it 1 year at the University of Idaho, and I made a trip down to the White Bird Canyon, which is the site of the first battle in Chief Joseph's long battle with the cavalry back in 1877. Some of you may be familiar with that story, but that's where I first really came to realize what a long and rich history we have in this country, and of a whole other world there that I really realized that I didn't know anything about. It was at a later time that I read a biography of Chief Joseph about 1980, and that really started me on my current track of using some of these materials. Also about that same time, I struck up a friendship with a colleague of mine at Evergreen State College. I was teaching there at the time. Kos Nahabi, and you'll notice that I've used some of his materials in some of these compositions that I'm sharing with you today. His American name is Don Jordan. My main interest in working with this material has been an attempt to recreate the poetic images, as well as to attempt to integrate Native American song materials into a contemporary context. And I guess I'll have to let you judge for yourself how successful I've been with that. I'm hoping someday to write a much larger scale work. The materials that I'm sharing with you today are all chamber works, and I have not set any text materials. These are all instrumental recordings, but I'm hoping at a later time to use some of this material to combine with visuals, dance, and perhaps video resources to make a much larger work that I would like to do. Some of the problems that I had in working with this is that as you start to study this material more, you find that there are lots of discrepancies in the way music is transcribed, the way events are reported, the way translations are made. And so at a certain point, you just have to jump in and hope that maybe you've found the right one to use. I've tried to approach this in the sense of trying to be sensitive to the Native American culture and trying to understand their cultural milieu and to use the material in a way that I would hope would complement their sensitivities. There's certainly a dichotomy of styles and philosophy about the role of culture in society when one starts to look at white versus Native American, and I've tried to be sensitive to that as well. Also, in working with the music, of course, there are some limitations that one maybe sees from a white perspective, in that the Native American music tends to be very strongly pentatonically organized. From our standpoint, perhaps we may think that the scale resources are somewhat limited, but as I've worked with it, I found that there's a certain richness there, what I first saw as limitations. Most of the music, of course, is monophonic, primarily uses the voice with very little instrumentation other than various kinds of percussion instruments. In some of the cultures, some use of flute and some very simple string instruments. So those were some of the limitations that I found as I started to work with some of this material. Some of the works that I have worked with this material include work I did in 1980 called Music for Chief Joseph, which was for oboe and four trombones. I didn't make use of any quotation, but I did work with a certain poetic image and the biographical tale of Chief Joseph and his struggles with the U.S. Cavalry back in 1877. Subsequently, I wrote other works, Northwest Sketches for flute, oboe, and piano, then image music, which I'll begin with today, which I wrote for an attendance that I had at the Charles Ives Center back in 1982 with artists there on flute, oboe, trombone, and contrabass, kind of an unusual combination, but I think it works. Then later I wrote Oregon Coastal Sketches, which incorporates some usages of poetic material, One by One, which I'll just play briefly for you today, a fantasy nocturne, which I used based entirely on poetry of Coase's Nahabi, and Wind River Country, which I'll end up with today, which I wrote on commission from the University of Wyoming Woodwind Quintet. To begin with some examples, I think all of you have handouts here, so I don't know if I need to put all of the overheads that I have here. I'll just put that up so I have it to refer to. What I want to do is to play several examples out of some of the pieces that I've worked with, to play for you first the original source where I could find a recording or some type of recording so that you could hear it in its original or close to original way, and then the way I chose to use it in the composition. The image music that I wrote is in a overall five-part form, all to be the movements to be played one after the other, with a prologue, interludes, and then a coda and epilogue. And you can see the outline of the poetic material in the handout that you have there, so I won't go into that, but rather focus on just the specific examples. The first example I want to play for you is a usage that I had in the preface and makes use of an Iroquois dream song. All the sources you have on the handout there. And that would be this one here. I might say that in putting this piece together, I also tried to honor Coase's Indian background. His mother was Choctaw and Cherokee, and his father was related to Chippewa and Iroquois tribes. So I limited my choice of materials from those tribal areas. And this first one is an Iroquois dream song, and I found this in the Beerhorst source, and it's sung by Joshua Billy Buck around 1941. Thank you. Now, the where I use this is quite a ways into the first movement, and in a contrasting section out of the preface to this work. And I have scores here. I'll try to move these along as the music plays. I assume that probably many of you did read music and might be interested to see how this appears in the score, so I'll move those along as I play the example. The next example is in one of the interludes, subtitled Mystically, and this makes use of a Choctaw pleasure dance. And again, I originally found it in the Beerhorst source. This was a piece, though, that was originally collected by Francis Denmore some years ago around the turn of the century. I also made use of this particular excerpt later on, and I'll play you a longer section of this where I reworked this material and combined it with another Indian source in the woodwind quintet. But for right now, this is the first the original example of the pleasure dance. One thing with this is that it does make, in its original source, not in this particular recording, but does make use of a certain polymetric kind of an accompaniment, which is very interesting. I found this in a number of examples where the song may be moving along in one way and the accompaniment is in a totally contrasting polymeter in the accompaniment or in the use of percussion. To the example where I've used it. Thank you. You'll hear a little bit more of that later in a little different guise in the woodwind quintet. The next example makes use of two sources. First of all, a Cherokee lullaby, again taken from the Beer Horse source, and then the use of a Chippewa flute melody. And you'll find this on the next page of your handout. And I'll play the two original sources for you and then how I used it. You might, as this, to get a little more sense of this musically, try to read a little bit of the poetic material that goes along with this. That might help you get a little better sense. Because of time, I didn't want to read all of that to you. But this is from, in my use of the material, this is from the Interlude C, and with a subtitle, Balancing One or the Other. And it has to do with the relationship between mother and father. But here are the two original sources.
Thank you.
The last example out of this composition comes from the epilogue, and is at the point in the poetry that I choose to set hung suspended in the dawn, wearing Venus as a crown. At this point, there's a short introduction, and then I make use of a Chippewa song called Farewell to the Warriors. There are actually different versions of this available. I've given you two different transcriptions. This was one of the points where I realized that people have different ideas when they hear the same things, and they end up getting transcribed slightly differently. The one that I chose to use is the one on the top, and that's the example that I'll play for you. Another one that was conducted by Francis Densmore. Now for a little change of pace, just a short excerpt out of a composition where I used only the poetic image, again poetry by Khosna Habi, a piece that I wrote for flute and harp. And this will just show you an example where I worked entirely just with the poetic image, and these are just the opening measures of this. Thank you. And the last work I wanted to share with you today is a piece that I wrote a couple of years ago called Wind River Country. This was written on commission from the University of Wyoming Woodwind Quintet, and in it I wished to capture the flavor of the Wyoming country. And so with that, I made use of several Native American sources, one of which is a Pueblo song. Going to be playing an original source on these last examples. I'll just play you directly out of the way I use them. This is, you'll find it quoted, I'll play this for you in a moment, down on the fourth system in the flute, which is the top line. But this is a Pueblo song, which interestingly enough, I found by way of Ernest Bloch. Some of you might know of his work called America, which was written in 1926, for which he was quite well known in the day. He won a very substantial composition prize for it. But he used this song first, and his original source was out of the Densmore collection. So this is a musical excerpt that I use really throughout this composition. It'll return in some other guises as I play some other examples. Then later on, I'll go right to a second example. Out of this first movement, which is called Teton Majesties, and I make use of a Cheyenne mezcal song, Mata Nauts, which I found in the Natalie Curtis, the Indians book, and that's on your last page of your handout. I'll just go ahead and play this first excerpt for you. This is the second excerpt that I use. Then in the third movement, which is called Yellowstone, Land of Many Smokes, with a subtitle Fantasy, Meadows, Mud Pots, and Geysers, I use a short recap of the Pueblo song again with a slightly different orchestration. Then finally, the sort of the capstone movement in this composition is the fourth movement, which is called Sacagawea in Memoriam. It's a very long aria with an extensive solo for oboe. And this makes use of the previous Pueblo song, as well as the Choctaw dance that I played for you earlier. So in a sense, it's somewhat of a reworking of that earlier movement, and I think perhaps in a little more successful guise than in the other composition. I tried in this to leave a certain as you can see, the score is written in an open form with no meter, and I felt that more clearly captured a more improvisational nature that one might find in Native American approach to music. So this whole piece is really shaped by the performers themselves in terms of the pacing of it, but I think it works quite well. And lastly, I want to play two excerpts out of the last movement, which is called Rendezvous Green River. And at this point, the Cheyenne Mescal song comes back again, and then a short excerpt at the end of the piece where I combine everything together. I also asked the quintet to clap at this point, and I'll tell you that I learned an interesting thing. It's very hard to get musicians to clap and stamp their feet when they're used to just playing an instrument, but I think it works. Then into an excerpt at the very end. Thank you very much. I've run a little bit over time here, but thank you for listening.